Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hi, everybody. Happy weekend. Thanks for joining me for episode number 36 of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. As always, I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and today I'm coming to you on a Saturday rather than Friday. If you were looking for an episode yesterday and wondering what was going on, you have my sincere apology. I should have probably seen this coming and given you some heads up. But it's become more and more difficult for me to record the show during the week as I had been doing in the past. I'd recently moved to putting the show up Friday night instead of Friday midday, and I think I'm going to go ahead and make this an official change now, that the show is now going to go up on Saturdays. It's just the nature of my schedule right now with graduate school and teaching and also writing. So my apologies again for the inconsistency. I have been putting a show up every Friday since last March until last week. Well, until today, really. But starting today, they will be going up on Saturdays, every Saturday. But have no fear, the show will continue. I have readings lined up, and a couple of guests down the road, too. So come back for more readings, an interview here and there. Today, I'm going to be reading from indie author Ken Britz. I'm very excited about this. It's a very interesting book. It's like Arthurian science fiction, which I think is a really cool, fresh genre blending in sort of the year of genre blending, if I can call that early. I know it's really sort of the year of author collaborations, but I feel as though the genre blending is going to be the thing here in the last month, and then probably the thing in 2018, as prefaced, of course, by Michael Anderley's breakout work. But now you have, like, Chris Fox doing space fantasy, and that is just taking off. Well, here's something else. Arthurian science fiction that is a cool genre blending. So I'm going to go ahead and read Ken's Amazon author bio before I say anything else. He writes, Ken Britz was born and raised in the Midwest. At 19, he enlisted in the United States Navy and was commissioned after graduating from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign with a BS in computer science. After successful submarine service and a shore tour, he transitioned to the Navy Resources, where he continues to serve. He earned an MBA from New York University Stern School of Business and currently works in sales and engineering. He is an avid reader of fiction, primarily science fiction and fantasy, and nonfiction, business, strategy, and biographies. Fall to Earth is his first novel. All right, so there is Ken's concise, all-business Amazon author bio. Ken sounds like just a really cool dude. Shout out to the Midwest. It's where I'm also from. I was born and bred in Michigan. I'm currently in Iowa, so Illinois is right in between. Really cool that Ken has this Navy experience. And Ken and I have chatted just a little bit in messages on Kboards, where he's sort of congratulated me on my releases in the Starship Fairfax series. And it's funny because he sort of confessed to me that he has a lot of trouble with a lot of military science fiction because he's actually military. So he knows what it should be like. And it's almost never right in terms of tone, in terms of terminology, in terms of what's believable, just like procedures and chain of command and all that stuff. And I freely confess and admit that my Starship Fairfax books are incredibly light when it comes to the military side. It's a little sad. I actually feel a little bad when I talk to someone like Ken, who has real legitimate service, and thank you for that service, Ken, because I sort of co-opted military, because military sci-fi was having such a hot moment, you know, a year ago. But in truth, my Starship Fairfax books are really action-adventure science fiction, set in a universe with a really, really loose military structure, I would say. So anyway, I'm interested to see what Ken comes out with. Having that military background, I'm sure it informs his writing. The novel he mentioned, his first novel, Fall to Earth, is the novel from which I'm reading today. I'll be reading the entire first chapter, and this is book one of his series, Pillars of Fire and Light. He also has book two out, which is called Apollo Burn. And I want to mention that right now, both books are priced at 99 cents on Amazon. I think that might be a permanent price, or at least the price for now, for Fall to Earth. But for book two, Apollo Burn, it looks like that's on a Kindle Countdown sale for 99 cents. Just for like another day here. So if you're listening to the show tonight, that is Saturday on November 18th, you need to go grab these books. They're both just 99 cents. And presumably after tomorrow, Sunday, November 19th, book two will go back up to, it looks like, $4.99. So it's quite a discount, deep discount. I'd like to read Ken's book blurb for Fall to Earth. That is his Amazon book description. It reads, Arthurian legends return from ancient myth into the modern world. Arthur's found his greatest knight, but that's just the beginning. Young and brash, Indiana Beckham only wants one thing, to be the best swordsman in the world. There's only one problem, two if you count her ego. She's been banned from the Olympic Games, ruining her shot at sweeping gold. Deep in the hills of Pennsylvania, a secret project is brewing, led by two brilliant scientists. Arthur McGabrin has harnessed new technology that can change the world, or destroy it. Convinced by Arthur, Indiana joins his team at Project Avalok, undergoing a transformation of body and mind to unlock the ability to tap into a new energy source. Commander Jerry Brand is ready for space, only her chances of being on one of the last space shuttle launches are fast dwindling. A new project begins in secret, promising a revolutionary shuttle engine that will make space travel achievable. Cornwall Marks wants only one thing, to make Arthur pay for past transgressions. He's determined in power, and has a secret weapon, the precognitive AI named Oracle. He'll bend Arthur, Indiana, and the future to his will. Only Indiana can keep Arthur's vision alive. But will her quest to be the greatest also be the death of her? Read the novel where it all begins, a blend of science fiction, action-adventure, and mythology. Arthur's arrival heralds fundamental changes in humanity for generations to come. All right, very cool blurb. Lots of characters. We've got some conflict set up. Some spoilers for the reading today, because in the reading today, we're introduced to the main character, Indiana, and of course to Arthur. But we don't know yet for sure that she's going to join him. So that's all right. There are some really nice tropes that the reading hits on for her character. Some nice tropes that blurb hits on. Of course, it seems like the sort of rebellious, hotshot woman main character is also kind of having a moment right now. A la, again, Michael Anderle, just going to call him out for it. It's a big moment for that character right now. That trope, that archetype, sounds like that's working in this book as well. I'm curious to know what everyone thinks about this new, well, it's not new, but this this current re-leaning into sort of science fiction fantasy, I would say. Now, I used to think of Star Wars as science fiction fantasy because the Force was kind of like magic. Of course, they sort of uber sci-fied it all with the prequel stuff. Who knows now what that's all going to mean for the future films. Certainly, Dune has a lot of fantasy-type tropes, even though it's set in a sci-fi universe. But again, I mentioned Chris Fox's book, and I'm going to probably mention this for a few weeks to come because I'm reading it right now and I'm really, really enjoying it. His book, Tech Mage. It's just, it's the best thing this guy's ever written. And it's obviously science fiction and also obviously fantasy, really sort of seamlessly blended. Who is it who has that famous quote about any technology of a sufficient advancement is indistinguishable from magic? I think it's possible. I'm going to put forth an idea into you, Internet. And listeners, feel free to discuss, disagree, or agree. I think it's interesting. I think it's possible that we've reached a turning point in our science fiction tales. Star Trek is an action-adventure story now. And it's a wonderful action-adventure story, but the technology, the science fiction part of it, is not what's so incredibly interesting anymore. Not when you have such within our grasp almost hard sci-fi tales as like The Martian, which really makes a Star Trek type universe seem much more believable, even though obviously there are a lot of fantastical elements, like all these other humanoid races and everything, and faster-than-light travel. Is it possible that we've pushed the envelope so much on this sort of harder science fiction that science fiction has nowhere to go but into the realm of fantasy? Do you think we're going to see more and more of this type of genre blending, where magic and technology come together? I'm curious to know what you think. I love what Ken is doing here, taking the Arthurian mythology and putting it into a science fiction context. I'm really, really curious to see what the rest of his series does with it. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the book. I hope you really enjoy today's reading. I want to remind everyone, as always, this reading does not come from an official audiobook. It is presented here just for the purpose of this podcast, with the author's permission. And as always, I'm going to provide links to the author's website and to his Amazon author page in the show notes. Without any further ado, here is my reading of the first chapter of Ken Britz's Fall to Earth. I hope you enjoy it. Do come back again next week for another indie author reading, and good luck everybody with the second half of NaNoWriMo. Keep at it. Fall to Earth. Pillars of Fire and Light. Book 1 by Ken Britz. Chapter 1. Crossroads at Dawn. New York City, New York. I'm not sure if I'm looking at futility or triumph in defeat, the man next to Indiana said. Of course, that depends on what kind of person you truly are. Indiana turned, ready to burn flirtation to the ground and salt the earth afterward. The man was gazing intently at the painting they sat before. She followed his gaze and drank in the riot of vivid blues and browns of a battle in progress. Why had she come to this painting? She was unsure. Perhaps it reflected her mood, or she was merely exhausted from the day-long flight from Beijing and her nerves were jangled. That's a terrible opening line, she growled. The handsome man with close-cropped blonde hair and startling blue eyes shrugged and then smiled. I was talking about the painting. He nodded at the mural and then smiled at her, offering his hand. Lieutenant Arthur McGabrin, ma'am. Indiana Beckham, she said, taking his hand. If there was one thing Indiana savored from human contact, it was the handshake of everyone she met. It was a habit from shaking hands with every fencer before a bout. She could judge their strength and estimate their ability. The grip was a scale, weighing soul and purpose. While she had no strongman's grasp, no one matched the vitality in Indiana's fingers. His hand was rough, calloused, and felt like a larger version of hers. His handshake was like her father's, strong, purposeful, and warm. There was verve in it, a vibration in the blood that matched her own. It was an instant equality of being. A feeling sparked between them and arrested her mind. The connection was broken when he released her hand, but the moment lingered in her subconscious. Deja vu hit Indiana with a case of vertigo. Her tumultuous emotions receded in the face of new input. You can call me Arthur. You can call me Miss Beckham. Like Army Lieutenant? Navy. You're not in uniform. Most of us don't travel in uniform. I'm also not attached to a full military unit at the moment. Easier to get around. Interesting, she lied, trying to place where she had seen him before. She studied him, recognizing his eyes. Is it? No, she admitted. Do I know you? You might, if you remember. I met you last year, when you were leaving for the World Championship. Indiana processed this. Then the picture snapped in her head. This man had indeed been in a uniform, wearing a set of fatigues and the beginnings of a beard. Chicago? O'Hare, Arthur confirmed. That's fucking weird. Arthur shrugged. We shook hands. That I remember. I remember you said something that struck me as...
also weird?
Yes.
I had that coming.
No, really. You said something that, until this moment, I hadn't given 2 seconds of thought. If you want to be something more, we'll meet again in a year. Failing is only beginning. Why would I remember that?
Good stories should have a memorable beginning, he proposed.
Do you remember what I told you?
You laughed in my face.
Of course I did. Indiana frowned. You know how many lines of bullshit I'm fed on a daily basis? Arthur spread his hands in apology. Indiana continued. I didn't come find you, but here you are. Why?
I didn't say you'd find me. I said we'd meet again.
Indiana mulled that over, but was not ready to ask the most obvious question. How did he know? He had some angle, some way of knowing she would be here. It was the information age, after all.
she studied him, but saw no veil. Nothing that told her anything about him, except what he was in that moment. A man studying a painting.
"What are you going to do now?"
Arthur asked.
Indiana tilted her head back and closed her eyes.
"I haven't thought that far ahead."
"Get ready for next year's world championship?"
Arthur probed. Indiana shrugged. What was she going to do?
She was ready, more ready with each passing year and championship under her belt. But now what was she ready for?
She was adrift, unmoored from her established path. Her life had been derailed this week. She'd certainly made a mess of things with the National Olympic Committee, the International Olympic Committee, everyone. Anger burned in her belly again about what had transpired.
"What does this painting make you think of?"
Arthur prompted.
Indiana opened her eyes.
"A lost cause? Everyone died at the Alamo," she said.
"And yet, every one of these men fought and died there against a numerically superior force. Not only fought, but resisted for days before the final siege broke through. Do you think they were simply stupid?"
Indiana shrugged. "I don't see why they fought so hard for nothing."
"Just because you die doesn't mean the fight ends there. There's a lot that goes on after you've fallen. The Alamo was a rallying cry that's still remembered today. It was the beginning of freedom of Texas from Mexican hands. The Mexican army outnumbered the Texans, yet the Texans won the war."
"Starting to feel like a lecture," Indiana warned. The painting's flat images took on a quality she could not define. Arthur spread his hands.
"At the risk of stretching a bit too far, I was thinking it reminded you of the futility of your own fight. You're down, but it's not a last stand, by any means."
"I'm not sure. I may have burned the only bridge I had."
"I'd say that it was more of a burning of your boats situation."
"I don't know what that means."
"It means you've committed to a course of action in such a way that you can only succeed or be destroyed. Burning bridges means you cannot return the way you've come, but there are other options, other directions to go."
Indiana thought about her tirade at the press conference when it was announced that the entire U.S. Olympic fencing team was banned. After all, only their team captain, Elijah Prince, had tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. She could have gracefully accepted it, but she was Indiana Beckham, the best in the world. So, she let everyone know what she thought of the ban, of Elijah, and of the IOC.
She frowned.
"I think I see the distinction. You think I'm going down a path where I may only succeed or fail?" Arthur's look was far away, as if he were seeing something beyond the painting. Indiana knew that look. She had it every time she stepped onto the piste and calculated every move between her opponent and herself. Arthur said,
"Every person who makes that kind of decision knows the risk and endgame. They may not succeed, but there is no other option but to go on."
He nodded at the painting.
"I'd say these men had the same idea. They could have gone their own way. They didn't have to be in this fight.
I doubt they even knew how much that one last pledge to fight would mean to the rest of Texas. But they burned their ships and made their stand. They lost the battle, but won the war. The fight isn't over when the last man is down. Arthur continued, "If you think that's the path you're on, there's something you should see first. It will change the way you see everything." Indiana shook her head. "No offense, but I don't take offers from strangers." Arthur smiled, and Indiana felt warmth and charm. "I'm part of a project," he said, the intensity of his words fixating her attention. "I wish I could explain it, but..." He motioned around him. "Classified and need to know, etc. I can only say, if you were part of what I'm working on, with your skill set, you'd become something incredible." "That's nice. I'm already incredible. You know, world champion, Olympic gold medalist, and all that." "It would change the story. It wouldn't be the beginning of an end. And what you do at the project would change things for the human race within a generation. It would be succeeding in a way where no one would ever doubt who you are." "I already know who I am. Are you talking about my fencing skills, or..." she asked. "I'm talking about going beyond being just a fencer. What about using your skills to change the course of all history?" "Sounds like you're reaching." "I'm not. Look, there are two kinds of people in the world. One kind changes the world and makes things happen. The other is simply along for the ride. If nothing changes, neither do they. You could stay here. Stay on your path until you fall into obscurity. Or you can be the first kind of person and change the world." Indiana laughed. "That's your pitch?" Arthur nodded and smiled again. "It sounded good in my head." He glanced at his watch, an antique with a leather band and an ivory stag's head on the face. "Time to go." "Important things to do at your project?" she asked. "Naturally, and secretly." He dug into his jacket and slid a business card across the bench to her. She made no move to pick it up. It had only a number and a string of digits. "If you're not looking beyond tomorrow, come and see what I have to show you. You won't be disappointed." Indiana shrugged. "I'm pretty sure I would be, but I want to know something." Arthur tilted his head. "How did you know where I would be? Did you hack my phone or stuff a GPS into my bag?" she asked. "If I did that a year ago, would it still be working? You wouldn't believe me if I told you, but I'll say this much. What we're doing at the project, it is your destiny." "To hell with destiny," she replied. "I make my own future." "Wait, was that a Star Wars reference?" Arthur laughed. He exuded a confidence that was most unlike that of Elijah, who had a pretty face but mediocre talent. "I know you're interested and intrigued. If you decide to come, fly to Baltimore. Text the code to that number before you board your flight, and I'll take care of the rest." Arthur got up and walked away. "What makes you think I'm coming?" "I don't." He gave her a mock salute. and she tilted her head in response. He vanished into the museum crowd.
"Screw that," she mumbled.
She stared at the painting for a long time. Among the whirlwind of activity over the past week, this was a refreshing turn. Arthur had asked her the same questions she was already asking herself. Without provocation, her mind turned back to the week's events, and anger's dark cloud again threatened to break. Her phone vibrated in her pocket. She reached into her red Olympic jacket and checked the number before answering. It was her brother, Hector Beckham. She stabbed hard at the answer button.
"What?" she snapped. "Good to hear from you, too."
"Fuck off.
I can hear that you're barely over what's happened, so I'm just going to give you the bad news."
"Keep digging my grave," I say.
"All your sponsors have pulled out. Before you ask why, it's not because of you. They feel the sport has been tainted now. I've already spoken to our lawyers, and per your deals, you'll still receive 70% of the contracted amounts."
Indiana ran her fingers through her black mane. She needed a shower.
"I don't care about them." "The lawyers are the sponsors."
"Yes."
"You do. I do. You got modeling contracts as an athlete. Not a common thing. You also brought fencing into the spotlight. Now it's going to go back to the dark pages of Obscure Sports Quarterly. It's a shame."
"Still don't care," Indiana spat. "Is that the only reason you're calling me?"
"Yes, and to find out where the hell you are so I know what flight to catch to retrieve you."
"I don't want to be found right now. Heck," she thought about her recent conversation.
"Are you tracking me through my phone?" "You tend to lose them, remember? That's actually a good idea, though. You in a good place?"
"Loaded question, bro."
"True. I'm still trying to appeal the NOC and IOC rulings. You gonna be home when I'm done?"
Indiana avoided the question. "If you have some spare time, kick Elijah in the balls for me."
"You figuratively ripped them off already, but I'll do my best to salt the wound. Talk to our firm about a lawsuit."
Indiana sighed audibly, already bored. Something gnawed at her. Hector took the cue without missing a beat.
"I'll let you know what pans out."
"Super," she said, and hung up. She pushed all of her pain and emotion onto Hector. He did not deserve it, but he also never let it bother him. He took her anger, indifference, and passion in equal measure.
"What am I doing here?" she asked the painting.
Texans and Mexicans fought and died, a frozen moment in an artist's eye.
"The fight isn't over when the last man is down," Arthur had said.
She studied the figure in the coonskin hat, and Indiana imagined a kindred sense of defiance in the face of hopelessness. The gnawing sensation grew in her gut as she played through the possibilities. The painted sky was a mix of blues tinted with orange, a dawn that was beginning just as things were ending. A few people stared at her as they walked past. She put her sunglasses on to hide from the world. She picked up the card. The gnawing sensation grew But she knew what it was now. It was curiosity and indecision. She wanted to know how Arthur had known she would be here, of all places. She had never been here and never seen this painting before. That curiosity worried at her, along with indecision regarding what to do with her life among the ruins of her career. She hated indecision. She preferred to act. So, she acted.
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.